Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Tapi Janna Valabha Girivarada Tapi Janna Valabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Gopi Janna Valabha Girivaradhari Gopi Janna Valabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Brajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Brajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jai Jagannath Jaya Jai Jagannath Jaya Jai Baladev Jaya Jai Subhadra Jai Gaura Haribo, 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 Jai Gaura Haribo. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada.
Vishnu Padaya Paramahamsa Pari Vigacharya Satar Sadha's Divine Grace Missi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Om Vishnu Padaya Paramahamsa Pari Vigacharya Satar Sadha's Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Grantharat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai All glories to the symbol of devotees All glories to the symbol of devotees All glories to the symbol of devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Today's reading is from Canto 10, Chapter 15, entitled The Killing of Dehanuka, the Ass Demon, verses 44 through 46, which is verse 44. the main verse.
Tayor Yashoda Rohinyao Putraya Putravatsale Yatakamam Yatakalam Vyadhatam Paramasishaha Tayor Yashoda Rohinyao Putraya Putravatsale Yatakamam Yadakalam Vyadatam Paramasishaha Tayor Yashoda Rohinyao Putraya Putravatsale Yatakamam Yatakalam Vyadatam Paramasishaha Ayor Yashoda Rohinya Putraya Putravatsala Akamam Yatakala Vyadatam Paramashishaha Ayor Yashoda Rohinya Putraya Putravatsala Dhakamam Yadhakalam Vyadhatam Paramasishaha
Anyone else?
Dhyaya Shuddha Rohinya Putraya Putravatsala Yadhakaman Yadhakalam Vyadattam Paramasishaha.
Thank you for chanting. We go to a word by word translation.
Tayaha. To the two. Yashoda Rohinyao. Yashoda and Rohini, the mothers of Krishna and Balaram respectively. Putrayaha, to their sons. Putra Vatsale, who are very affectionate to their sons. Yatakamam, in accordance with their desires. Yatakalam, in accordance with the time and circumstances. Vyadatam, presented. Param Asishaha, first-class enjoyable offerings.
Translation of verse 44.
Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini, acting most affectionately toward their sons, offered all the best things to them in response to their every desire and at the various appropriate times. So we'll just read verse 45 and 46 real quick and go back to the purport to this verse. Verse 45. By being bathed and massaged, the two young lords were relieved of the weariness caused by walking on the country roads. Then they were dressed in attractive robes and decorated with transcendental garlands and fragrances. Verse 46. After dining sumptuously on the delicious food given them by their mothers and being pampered in various ways, the two brothers lay down
upon their excellent beds and happily went to sleep in the village of Raj. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Verse 44. The word Paramasishaha indicates the attractive blessings of a loving mother, which include wonderful food, beautiful clothes, jewelry, toys, and constant affection. The words Yata Kamam Yata Kalam indicate that although Yashoda and Rohini satisfied all the desires of their sons, Krishna and Balaram, they also properly regulated the boys' activities. In other words, they prepared wonderful food for their children, but they saw to it that the boys ate at the proper time. Similarly, their children would play at the proper time and sleep at the proper time. The word Yata Kamam does not indicate that the mothers indiscriminately allowed the boys to do whatever they liked, but in the proper civilized way, they showered their blessings upon their children. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments that the mothers loved their sons so much that as they embraced them, they would carefully check all their limbs to see if they were healthy and strong. Thank you for coming today and to class, and this pleasant weather. It's going to get a little bit warmer later in the day, so let's complete our spiritual program so to feel strong to withstand the, you know, our Chicago climatic conditions. There are so many sweet verses in Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything is so sweet and special. These two verses, three verses, describe how the mothers took care of Krishna and Balaram, Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini. In the purport, it is explained that that's what was interesting for me, was that although the boys had their desires fulfilled, those desires were fulfilled at appropriate times, and the purport refers to eating and sleeping and recreation. Okay, so I'd like to take this purport and this particular point about regulation of our activities, and kind of expand on it based on the purport, because it is so good to be regulated from the very beginning. I personally was not so fortunate, and we had to develop some discipline later and regulate the activities of eating and sleeping and work later in life. So when you are properly regulated by your parents, by your teachers, from the very young age, it is so much easier to perform yoga and spiritual activities. It says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, verse 17, that when one is properly regulated in the habits of eating and sleeping and recreation, one can mitigate all material pains by practicing yoga. So, unfortunately, in this age of Kali Yuga, not only do we have a hard time, spiritualists, in general, have a hard time regulating the senses and the various activities of the senses, but most people actually do not want to regulate anything. They just want to be indiscriminately satisfying their desires and and the enjoying spirit. I remember this lecture maybe over a month ago by His Grace Anuttamadas. Anuttamadas Prabhu, he was referring to this one song from years ago. There was a song that ran something like, "The dogs run free, why can't we?" So I kind of remember this, and it actually seems so true when you watch today's society, that people do not want too much regulation in the matter of eating and sleeping and sex life and intoxication. They just want to either create their own rules and regulations or not follow anything. And just see how frustrated they are later in life, and they develop all kinds of illnesses and diseases, chronic diseases from overuse of the senses. They're not properly regulated. The mind and the enjoying spirit expressed through our minds drags us to different activities. And then we exhaust our life force. And we have no desire whatsoever to engage in spiritual life. And sometimes we frustrated, actually every time, just sooner or later, we're frustrated with even our materialistic activities that are meant for our enjoyment. And we are confused. We keep switching from one activity to another and getting frustrated again and again. Everything is due to lack of regulation and doing everything in the right amount and at the right time. So in this lecture, I'd like to focus on these three activities. I chose eating, sleeping, and recreation, which I kind of equate to work, maybe work for pleasure, work for delayed pleasure, which is your paycheck, go to work. I'd like to discuss these three activities and use the purport and also use some knowledge from the Vedic scriptures, such as Ayurveda, which gives us a very detailed description and analysis of how a yogi or spiritualist could regulate his or her senses. Many of these points are also covered in Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada mentions many times in his purports and lectures that excessive sleep is very detrimental to spiritual life. Sounds like too much sleep is even worse than not enough sleep. Not enough sleep is good, but we will discuss it later. But so the class will be basically on why, what are we regulating, and why, and how is it, in what way is it good to regulate our activities of eating and sleeping and work. Bhagavad Gita mentions in chapter 3, verse 40 and 41, it gives us an answer. What are we regulating and why? It says in verse 40, Indriyani mano buddhir asya dishtana muchate etair vimokhyayate esha genam avritya dahinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So we perform our work through the senses, and the mind drags us into different activities. Why does it drag us there? Because of the enjoying spirit. The enjoying spirit was transformed from the original love for Krishna into lust. So it's contaminated. It's known as lust. And it could mean not only lust doesn't specifically refer to sexual life. It refers to greed, any excessive spirit of enjoyment for anything in this world. So through the senses, you know, your mouth, your legs, everything, your intelligence, the lust pervades the entire body and drags us to different activities. In the next verse, Krishna tells Arjuna, therefore, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses and slay the destroyer of knowledge and civilization. So if you're on the path of spiritual life, like we are, it is a very good idea to regulate the senses. So we curb that lust and transform it into the original love for Krishna. So we cover eating through the mouth first. Obviously, we have to eat to keep the body and spirit together. Krishna does not want us to suffer excessively because of hunger and excessive austerities. And we have to keep the soul and body together so we can help the Sankirtan movement and engage in our various devotional services. So in order to keep the body and soul together, you have to eat something. But it cannot happen unless we regulate the urges of the tongue and belly. Explained in the Nectar of Instruction, I think the first verse, maybe the second verse, that if you cannot regulate the senses, the urge to speak and the tongue and the other senses, you cannot practice Bhakti Yoga. You cannot even help others in Bhakti Yoga and lead them through spiritual life. You cannot be a leader in any capacity, or at least not an effective leader. You may call yourself a leader, but it will be more of a less cheating. So unless you regulate the urges of the tongue and belly, it's the main one, and you can control the mind easily and the other senses that are in the body. Ayurveda gives us a nice description, a nice statement that emotional eating based on the urge of the mind to eat and to pacify certain emotions of anger and you name it, all the negative emotions. Eating emotionally based on emotion is not recommended because one builds up subtle toxins in the system that can lead, in the course of time, manifest as chronic diseases or physically manifested in the body. One should perform, pacify the mind by doing yoga, pranayama, breathing, physical postures, and proper breathing, and mantra, chanting Hare Krishna. And then one will only feel the hunger that's necessary for the body and mind to stay together nicely in good optimal balance. So Ayurveda recommends that first you do your morning program, do your yoga, do your chanting, do your stretches, and then you can have breakfast, prasadam. You will appreciate it much more, and you will not overeat. The principle of moderation, that's how you apply it, put it into practice. So Ayurveda teaches that if you're concerned about spiritual life, there's a specific food regimen for yogis. And I think many of our devotees, and especially sannyasis, follow a diet that's good for yogis, so it is easier for them to devote themselves completely to this path of bhakti yoga. So Ayurveda teaches something beyond, you know, many people in the West that are not necessarily spiritual, they say that, oh, you know, if you, as long as you don't drink, don't smoke, sometimes they say, don't even, you know, maybe you don't eat meat, that is good, keep it clean, maybe even become vegetarian or vegan, then you're good. But Ayurveda goes one step, actually two or three steps further, and Ayurveda will teach you that one should not only give up the intoxicants and heavy foods that were obtained by violent means, but Ayurveda also teaches to eat according to your nature and body type, which Ayurveda analyzes and gives you a specific recommendation. Some people should have more fattening foods, and some people should have more lean foods, raw foods. Ayurveda goes another step forward and recommends that we eat, if you're serious about spiritual life, you should eat foods in the mode of goodness. Some examples may be peaches, mung beans, you know, wheat. You know, it's controversial. Some many fitness enthusiasts and nutritionists say that wheat is not good for you. You know, Ayurveda has an answer that first of all, your digestive system has to be healthy. Second of all, you have to obtain a high quality product, and then if you prepare it nicely, there is nothing wrong with wheat. Make chapatis and eat in moderation. So Ayurveda recommends foods in the mode of goodness for yogis, avoiding items such as garlic, you know, tomatoes, even and overly spicy foods, which may be helpful at some point. Ayurveda goes a step further and recommends that we eat those foods in the mode of goodness. Bhagavad Gita teaches that one should offer food to Krishna. If you cannot make the food with your own hands or obtain prasadam, it is also very good to at least thank Krishna or Vishnu for what you're getting. Let's say you're stuck somewhere and you don't have prasadam, you have to buy some pretzels. You know, you have to avoid hunger and keep the energy going. So let's say you have some food that is vegetarian, but it's processed, it's not even organic, and it's not very fit for offering to Krishna. But you can appreciate it that somehow Krishna created this, and you'll be thankful that this food, you're able to obtain that kind of food. And in this mood of thankfulness, maybe not making an offering to Krishna, but just thanking Krishna for it, and just eat it. This is where you control your consciousness, and you stay in the right consciousness, even when you're unfortunately not eating prasadam every time. Talking from my own experience here, sometimes I take an energy bar, a protein bar that was not made by devotees. So all I can do is be thankful to Krishna. Thank you. Let me give you some examples here. How the foods work, they can throw your balance off for spiritual life. For example, if I eat food that is overly spicy, I may be overly excited to engage in activities. For example, whenever I eat spicy food, we're not necessarily talking about prasadam, just in general, take it out of context for a little bit. And think that you're eating spicy food and you're not even practicing bhakti yoga. Okay? Taking spicy food will engage you into action. You'll feel like exercising, you know, running, jumping. Do something physical because you have that extra energy, extra fire. Okay? So if I eat spicy food, if I'm a spiritualist practicing yoga, I may not necessarily want to sit down and chant the mantra. I want to be running around, and maybe I should be running around and chanting Hare Krishna loudly the top of my lungs. Maybe I should not be sitting quietly. But the idea is that, you know, it makes me feel like I want to exercise and do something physical, not necessarily do my peaceful mantra. If I eat food that is sweet or too much of it, I feel like I feel a little bit lazy. I want to stay in my comfort zone. I don't feel like doing things. Why should I do anything? Just stay home, watch some TV, relax. It will slow down your motivation and energy for action, for properly controlled action. You'll be lazy in the mind, lax. If you eat good food, let's say you're eating food that's neither too spicy or too sweet, not too salty, but you overeat, what happens, there's pressure, downward pressure. Srila Prabhupada explains it, and I think in Nectar of Instruction, downward pressure on the genitals, and the mind will be pulled in a different way still. So each, the amount of food and the flavor of the food will affect your mental nature. So here are some of the points that Ayurveda recommends. Eating in the mode of goodness for yogis, eating in moderation, and offering the food to the Supreme Lord, ultimately. So if you are working in that intelligently, you will offer Krishna foods that are in the mode of goodness. This is very good. If you offer other foods, that is fine too, but just make sure you don't overeat. Because we don't work, I'm talking about myself, we don't work from a transcendental spiritual platform. The food still may affect us in unwanted ways, because our minds are not pure, 100%. It's a process, and as long as we are in the process of sadhana bhakti, at this phase, we have to be very careful how we regulate this sense to eat, the urge to eat, the tongue. I think these are most of the points I would like to cover for the eating part through your mouth. And the nice verses from Bhagavad Gita, from chapter 9, verse 26, Patra Pishpam Palam Toyami Omegatya Piraichati. Tadaham bhakti upahtam asnami prayatad manaha. If one offers me with love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. You can notice that these are items, as far as I know, in the mode of goodness. And then another, if you cannot always work, offer these simple things, you want to be more luxurious and offer more to Krishna, then sometimes you cannot be very strict and you have to offer items that, you know, let's say you made it but it's too spicy. What to do? You're not going to throw it away. You ask Krishna for forgiveness and still offer through your guru, through Srila Prabhupada, to Krishna. And so this is another verse. Yat karoshi yadasnasi yat juhosi dadasyat yat tapasyasi kantaya mat kurusha madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform, do that, the son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So these are some of the verses to go by when we satisfy our need for food. Another item that I like to discuss today is recreation. Usually it's associated with, you know, going, you know, golfing, tennis, swimming, some recreation, biking. But I'd like to kind of equate the work, just work, and recreation. Obviously, sometimes some people have type of work that they do and they get a paycheck, but they really like their work so much, they don't feel like working. It's like they're always on vacation. So that's the ideal setup. When you're properly situated in your varna, you will not feel frustrated or dissatisfied with your work. You may be tired sometimes when you overdo it, but you will always be happy in the morning to go to work and perform your duties, whether you're a firefighter or a teacher, politician. So I'd like to equate this to recreation and work. Ideally, you love your work and then, you know, also you get paid for it. That would be nice. Most people in our society, they are not devotees necessarily, but you know, in general, they are not properly situated. They perform work for different reasons. They are you know, either going because of the money or opportunity, and they're not so much happy. So after you digest your food and you feel and the energy comes in for action, then you go to work. They go to work, and the work based on your consciousness and the food you eat, the work performed can be in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. If you have the right kind of food and the right kind of consciousness when you eat, you can perform any activity, any job in the mode of goodness. It's possible. That's what Ayurveda teaches. Being mindful when you eat, it'll give you the right kind of energy in the mode of goodness, and you can be a politician. But you can be in the mode of goodness. You know, our politicians, I don't think they're in the mode of goodness. Just a general statement. You can be a teacher, and if you eat the wrong type of food and an appropriate amount, you may be a teacher in the mode of passion. I remember, you know, in my home country, I have nothing against my home country. It's just the way, the environment I grew up in. We had teachers who were, teachers are supposed to be the Brahmins, right, in the mode of goodness, but many of my teachers were not so much in the mode of goodness. They were actually smacking us with rulers and making fun of us in front of class, you know. There were some extreme examples that I won't even tell you. Nothing like in America. There was not necessarily molestation or anything like that, but there were some, on a daily basis, they were making fun of us, yelling at us, and also, you know, smacking us in different ways, you know. Many teachers, not all of them, but so the experience was that, as I look at it now, they were not in the mode of goodness. They really looked upset, you know. And then we were afraid. We were studying hard to, you know, to make sure we pass the class, and we were really stressed before every class. Wow, I don't want to go back there to that chapter of my life. So a teacher can be in the mode of passion and in the mode of ignorance, depending on how they conduct their life. And a simple sweeper out on the street, manual laborer, they can be in the mode of goodness, even though their work may not require, they require some skill and knowledge, but they may not require as much finely tuned intelligence as that of a teacher. But the teacher can be in the mode of passion and ignorance, and the manual laborer can be in the mode of goodness. So it all depends on the food that you eat and the morning program that you conduct when you do yoga and your breathing and your mantra. So everything is determined by that. And the point is not to overdo on your activity as well. Even if you're in the mode of goodness doing your whatever you're doing, if you overdo on your activities, you will be tired. So what happens when you're tired, the mode of goodness turns into a passion a little bit and ignorance. Your mind is clouded and you cannot perform your duty as effectively because you're overly tired, so you have to moderate your activities and regulate them so you don't overdo it. The principle of moderation is taught in many spiritual schools, you know, Buddhists and Zen Buddhists, they teach moderation. Beyond that, Ayurveda and Bhagavad Gita recommend in chapter 3, verse 30, Mayi sarvani karmani sanyasyade atmatsetasha nirashirni mamma buddhva yudhyasva vikatajvaraha. Krishna tells Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit and free from lethargy, without claims to proprietorship, fight. One of our great devotees, Burijan Das Prabhu, he explains in his book, Surrender Unto Me, that this verse particularly means Krishna tells Arjuna to be free from the modes of ignorance and passion especially, and stay in the mode of goodness, and especially transcendental goodness, or pure goodness. So, with full knowledge of me, and pure goodness. If you're doing your work for Krishna, that's the highest level you can aspire to. Without desires for profit, do your work without desires for profit. Do your recreation or work for your paycheck. Take what's necessary to maintain yourself and the family, if you have it, and give a generous donation to the temple, and be happy. So no passion, no rajaguna, with no claims to proprietorship, no rajaguna. You're not claiming anything as our own. Everything comes from Krishna. It was graciously given to us at birth. We have nothing. We're born with nothing, and then everything will be taken away or transferred somewhere. We just all we take with us is our consciousness that is hopefully surcharged with remembrance of Krishna and a desire for service. And Krishna tells Arjuna, free from lethargy. So no ignorance. No ignorance. Don't be too lax and complacent. So this is a nice verse for ultimately how we could adjust our work and recreation. Just give you a little example. I used to overdo it on exercise, and because that was my rajaguna mode, you know, this was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed with this rajaguna mode. I couldn't stop, and I was just exercising for hours and hours every day. And, you know, exercise in and of itself is not so bad. It can help your health. But if you overdo it, you actually shorten your life, and it clouds your mind. You deplete your energy, and then your mind is clouded. So you have to use exercise and recreation in a moderate way. Ayurveda recommends pranayama and yoga as a sort of exercise and recreation. You know, do it. You know, do it for as part of your exercise routine. You can add some other things, but this is sufficient. Yoga routine and pranayama is sufficient for exercise. And bhakti yogis do some kirtan and some dancing, and this is perfect. Srila Prabhupada tells us it is perfect combination. You know, you do some exercise, jumping up and down, walk, run for Krishna, distribute books, eat prasadam in the proper consciousness, and be happy. Okay, so I have one more example. It's a funny one. I think it was funny, but it was actually in college here, in my cognitive psychology class in college. I won't tell you where, because I don't want this teacher to hear this. But to know that I'm talking about him. But anyway, it was so funny. He was very, very bright individual. So he was a cognitive psychologist. So I was trying to write something about, you know, Krishna and, you know, thinking about God and stuff. I was trying to include it in my paper, but he was like crossing it out and said, "No, you don't need this. This is how we figure it out." And but anyway, I was, I remember, you know, teachers should be in the mode of goodness, but he was a funny teacher and very strict and strong. I don't know about his, what his philosophy was exactly, like, you know, as far as spiritual life, if he believed in God or not, probably not. So he would always, you know, he was like, after 1 hour of philosophy or psychology, he would tell us, "Okay, take a break now. Oh, you know, we have 15 more minutes or another class coming. Take a break now. Go up there and we can discuss more if you want." So he would come out and take a cigarette and just start smoking. And he would keep debating with his students, you know, and then trying to defeat their arguments. And he took pleasure in it. But obviously, he didn't seem like he was in the mode of goodness. And he was on his break, really excited about debating and defeating his students and showing how cognitive psychology is better than some other philosophy, and also smoking. So he was not giving a great example to his students. But like I said, you can be a teacher in the mode of passion. You can be a simple worker in the mode of goodness. The next thing I'd like to discuss, and the last item, is sleeping. Sleeping, obviously, sleeping is necessary, and as long as we are in the sadhana bhakti stage, we have to get adequate sleep. And Srila Prabhupada recommends 6 hours. And sometimes new persons, when they come to Krishna consciousness, they may be discouraged by some of the recommendations, like, okay, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating. Oh, I sleep only 6 hours. If I sleep 10 hours, it's not good. So when they ask more questions, they kind of get discouraged that there are so many rules and regulations. Now, we can encourage them in different ways. Ayurveda expands on this idea of sleeping. Ayurveda basically tells you that, sure, you need sleep, but it is based on your body type and mental nature. If you're not really spiritually inclined and you want to just eat healthy, and Ayurveda recommends you at least, you know, eat for your body type. And if you're working in the mode of passion, you will require more sleep. If you work in the mode of ignorance, you will require more sleep, you know, 10 hours. And if you work in the mode of goodness, you will require less sleep. If you are a spiritualist, you will require less sleep. So if your aspirations are that of a spiritualist, you better sleep less than 8 hours. You better be close to 6 or less. For me, unfortunately, I do a lot of exercise that, you know, it's less than I used to do, but my body sometimes needs a little bit more, because I get my body tired here and there by teaching others how to exercise and doing my own workout. So sometimes I, you know, find myself sleeping for 8 hours. You know, it's tough. But you know, if I have an easier schedule, less exercise and more yoga, more chanting, then I can sleep 6 hours and I feel happy. So if you're in the mode of goodness and you're a spiritualist, you try to decrease sleep. Because sleep is, the more sleep you get, the more your mind is clouded. You need some rest and rejuvenation, but not beyond what is recommended by the yogis, by our parampara. 6 hours is great. There are many controversial studies. You know, usually the studies say that, okay, you need 8 hours, 8 hours, but the, you know, the problem is they do not consider when they say, oh no, you know, children need more sleep, and yeah, stuff like that. But in general, they say that 8 hours is good. But what they talk about is, you know, for health, but not necessarily for spiritual health, more like physical and emotional health. But then if you sleep 8 hours or 9 hours, you may not be so spiritually sharp, you know. Your mind loses some of the sharpness if you sleep more. And for some types of work, if you're, you know, a scientist or a teacher, you know, of some sciences and mathematics, you may need a sharper mind. So if you oversleep 8-9 hours, you won't be as sharp for your work. For myself, if I sleep 8 to 9 hours, and if I miss, you know, I wake up after 5 or 6, I feel too relaxed, and I don't feel necessarily like chanting, you know. So it affects me. I got enough rest for my body, but my mind is not ready for the morning program. I have to really take an extra effort to force myself to chant. Another thing about sleeping is it is important how if you're into feeling great and being a spiritualist and doing yoga, Ayurveda gives you some nice examples, nice principles to go by, like or how you should, how positioned you should how, what your position should be when you're sleeping. You know, for example, if your head is directed to the south and your feet to the north, you will receive more prana or energy for your next day. You have more energy. Okay, if your head is turned to the east and your feet to the west, you will have more meditative sleep. So it's very good for yogis. If you sleep with your head to the south and your feet to the north, and your face turned to the east, you'll be sleeping on your right side. You will open up your left nostril, and you'll feel more peaceful, and it'll be easier for you to control the senses. So it'll be easier for you to think about Krishna. It'll be easier for you to chant. And then, let's say your work is physical, and you know, you'll remember Krishna, but you want more energy, better digestion. If you sleep on your left side, you will open up your right nostril. There will be more air going to your brain through the right nostril, and you will feel more assertive, more stronger in the body. And you may be better off when you're performing physical work. You might want to sleep on your left side. So these are some of the things, that principles that Ayurveda teaches in reference to sleeping. In conclusion, I'd like to quote Srila Prabhupada and wrap it up with that. In verse 16, verse 17 of chapter 6, Srila Prabhupada says that, here it is, extravagance in the matter of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating, which are the demands of the body, can block advancement in the practice of yoga. And Srila Prabhupada gives us the ultimate conclusion about doing everything for Krishna. And if you're not 100% surrendered and devoted, you may benefit from, you know, the supplemental rules and regulations that Ayurveda teaches. Especially when you're doing sadhana bhakti, it may be helpful for you to remember Krishna and offer everything to Krishna by using some of the principles of moderation and eating for your body type and sleeping on the right side and going through some austerities as far as, you know, not eating too many sweets. All these items are very important, especially if you're a beginner bhakti yogi. And I for myself, I can attest to this. You know, it's really helpful for the morning program to follow a good, healthy diet in the mode of goodness. If you're not a spiritualist, that's quite a different thing, and you may benefit from other principles that Ayurveda teaches, but Ayurveda ultimately recommends that you become a yogi and develop high consciousness, spiritual consciousness. Otherwise, your happiness and health may be limited, and sooner or later you'll be frustrated and you'll downgrade from the mode of passion to ignorance, or from the mode of goodness even to the mode of passion. So Ayurveda and the Bhagavad Gita recommend we go in the direction of transcendence. So we serve the Supreme Lord. So devotees take control of their body and mind, body, mind, and spirit connection by inviting Lord Krishna into every activity of the day and taking advantage of other smart principles, that principles of conduct, such as moderation and being situated in their varna properly. In this way, serve Srila Prabhupada and his mission to the best of their potential. Thank you very much for your attention, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for the class. It's not a question, it's more of a comment, that we're about product of a sick system, educational system, in which humanistic topics are out of the equation. Now we're trained to fulfill a job market, more than to create people. Therefore, and the society also is leading us into stimulate our senses, which is how you fulfill your happiness. And there's a lot of sinful life out there pulling us permanently. And there's no way to get out if we do not counteract in our system, bringing what we know, what we have, that is Prabhupada's teachings. If that counteracts that, how do you say, counteracts this, I don't want to use the word degenerate, but it's the only one that comes to mind, is this, yeah, sinful life. Mm-hmm. We're permanently bombarded by a system that is absolutely sick.
Yeah.
No, that we have to go this way, this route. No, indulge in our senses and acquiring things in order for us to be happy. The education has been designed nowadays to be selfish and to be lusty and to be competitive. There's no sense of cooperation. There's no sense of a humanistic relationship among us.
Sure.
In order for us to build up a better society, a more humane society.
Yes.
You know, I remember one of the first lectures by Nityananda Pran that for me was absolutely like an epiphany, when he said, anything that we do that is not God-centered is sinful. We can do whatever we need to do. We have to do it in order for us to fitting in a society that is offering us all these things. But if we do not have Krishna, God, if we don't have God, it's impossible for us to reach a nicer and higher spiritual life.
Wow.
Yeah. So anything that we do is sinful if we do not have. Therefore, there's nothing wrong on working and working hard and making money and probably making a lot of money, as long as we use that money properly, as long mm-hmm. as we build relationships in our workplaces and stuff, everything is going to be sinful. But it's nothing wrong with going one day to the movies and enjoying it, or going out to a vegan restaurant and and have fun with the family, or or going to the beach in California or mm-hmm. Miami or the Mediterranean coast with the family or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your wife or your, you know, as long as we do it, but always consciously having God in our lives and being grateful for those things that we get, you know, admiring God's grandeur, you know, and God's creation and things.
Sure.
Is sinful.
Right. Thank you for your comment. I mean, this principle of appreciation, being grateful to God for everything, yeah. It's like number one, you know, you gotta have that before you can move on to other things.
So, expanding more on what Prabhu said here, if you're enjoying relationships you have with other people, let's say your family.
Sure.
But you've set up your family that it is a Krishna conscious family. Let's say children or parents or siblings.
Right.
You enjoy your relationships with them. Is that sinful as well?
It doesn't have to be.
Okay.
It depends on your consciousness, how you see them.
I'm trying to differentiate between the material side of relationships and then the spiritual side to them.
Sure. Well, you can maybe I can give you an example. Since I have a family, well, let me think. Okay. All right, let's say I have an uncle and I really like him. Okay, so we have a relationship. I knew him before I joined Krishna consciousness. I knew him, so I didn't cut the relationship. I still write letters to him. He's in Poland, let's say. He's in Poland, right? Far away, and sometimes I visit Poland and I see him, right? He kind of knows what I'm all about by now. He's like, yeah, this guy doesn't eat meat now. What's wrong with him? He doesn't drink. So he likes me, and I appreciate him for what he was when I was, you know, I was a teenager, and we hang out in Poland, you know. So now, let's say I visit Poland, you know, and I want to hang out with my uncle again. Okay, why do I want to hang out with him? Well, my motivation could be, okay, I want to actually go and, you know, to a restaurant with him and talk to him about spiritual life. That's my main goal. But he may not know this. He's just happy to see me, and I want to see him too. I want to help him out in spiritual life. But, so we meet, and we go to this restaurant, and I kind of direct the conversation in such a way that we talk spiritual life, and I order something, some vegetables and something vegan, and he eats meat. So he's has his consciousness and karma, and because of my motivation and intention, I can still remain in the mode of goodness in that situation. Now, Let's say I'm a yogi. Let's say I practice yoga and I still want to go to Poland and visit my family and my uncle. But somehow or other, I am too afraid to talk to him about bhakti yoga. I says, nah, he's too deep into his, you know, Polish culture or whatever. You know, but I want to invite him and I won't eat meat, but I'll talk all kinds of nonsense. And whatever he wants to talk about, I'm going to talk about that. So my intention is already different. I am afraid to lose relationship with him. And I decide to keep my, you know, spiritual practices a secret. He knows something that I'm into yoga and I don't eat meat, but he doesn't know much more beyond that. So I go to Poland, you know, and I meet up at a restaurant and he eats meat. He talks all kinds of nonsense. And I support him in that. And I said, yeah, great, great. You know, it's awesome. You know, I'm doing something, you know, and here in Chicago, something similar, but, you know, I don't eat meat. And we hang out and we spend time and we even play tennis or whatever. So this type of move on my part would put me out of spiritual life and make it sinful. But if my intention was different, it would still keep me in the spiritual platform while trying to maintain the relationship. So we have to see what do we have to compromise on our part, and if those who we want to keep the relationship with, if those people are willing to respect at least a bit of our boundaries, you know, they won't invite us to McDonald's. If they do, we're going to reject that offer. But if they invite us to a vegan restaurant, sure, and then we see what Krishna arranges, you know. So we have to find that point of that we can still maintain the relationship. If we don't maintain it, you know, it's too bad. You know, we try. We have good intention. I hope it kind of clarifies a little bit.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. Back to the Ayurveda. Well, first let's go with the sleep directions. Just, you know, head going to east like this. I just wanted to add one comment. Living in northern hemisphere, sleeping with your head towards the north, living in southern hemisphere with head sleeping towards the south, the iron in your blood starts to collect in the brain, reducing one's intelligence from the magnetic poles.
Wow.
So it's very, very important not to sleep with head towards the north in the northern hemisphere and vice versa in the southern hemisphere.
Well, I had no idea.
Now, with the sleep times are relative to Vata Pitta Kapha.
Sure.
This is why it's recommended to get up before 6 a.m., no matter what your constitution, because at 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. is Kapha, and this is when things slow down,
sure,
which makes it very, very difficult
exactly
to get up after 6.
Right, right.
So even 1 minute before 6 o'clock, 5:59, you're safe.
You made it.
6:01. Problem to start.
I know. I when I sleep past 6, I'm like, ooh. Everything is so slow and like, oh man, I have to do 16 rounds now.
Yes. And then I'm a neophyte devotee. I have minimal knowledge, but the danger of even these quote-unquote vegan restaurants, really the only safe places to eat is at home and at the temple.
Sure.
Recently in London, a vegan place caught serving chunks, so-called veggie chunks, and the employees found out it was chicken and reported this. The vegan soup, chicken stock. And then this was five-star restaurant, very exalted like this. And people are like, oh, let's go out. We're just going to go have some vegan food. This is Kali Yuga. The restaurants are very, very dangerous.
I wouldn't trust
them
either.
Very, very dangerous. I mean, and again, like, you know, yes, this is better than McDonald's, but still, it's a dangerous line going outside to these restaurants.
Yeah, 100%, I agree. So it's risky. It's best if we go to restaurants that are maintained by devotees. It's the safest. And make your own food. Sure, thank you for the comment.
Regarding what Jack was saying, we were brought up in Catholic and Christian families, Catholic background, all of them are, you know, with very few exception, they're meat eaters. They do not practice what they preach. And for us to come in with a new perspective, life perspective and lifestyle, is kind of shocking. And we cannot clash with them because actually we're coming to their house they built in their form. So the only thing that we can do is just preach with our example. Help me, Mataji, with that verse of the Bhagavad Gita in which Srila Prabhupada says that if we follow our principles, we're going to make disciples and devotees everywhere. If we do what we have to do and do it honestly and wholeheartedly, and people see it, is the best preaching thing. And we have to respect them and their...
Sure.
So they will respect us. My kids don't want to deal with anything related with religion, although I have them in sure. Catholic schools.
Wow.
They think I'm crazy, but in a loving way. And they laugh at me, but it's in a loving way. No, and for instance, I went to have dinner with my daughter on Tuesday, and the first thing she did was cook for me vegetarian meal. She has become vegetarian also. No, but she was thinking about my not because I'm her dad, sure. It's because she wants to respect the sure. fact that wow. I am a vegetarian.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah. And we do not discuss anything about religion, and we speak about from the most mundane to the most sublime things without making aggressions to each other in this regard, because we're not going to conciliate our positions. Mm-hmm. So it is not sinful to have a family that do not. As long as they are honestly in the religion and practicing what they are truly in the spiritual life, it's okay.
Sure.
Who we are to judge them.
Exactly.
We are in probably in the right path, but we're not in the right position yet. We are struggling every sure. single friggin' day to get the goal.
Mm-hmm.
So, don't worry.
Thank you. Very, very good comments, all of you. Thank you. We'll finish up here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.